morning, listeners. Welcome to Thursday in the Doghouse, an educational radio talk show devoted to our pet dogs. I'm your host, Rini Premeza, the Jersey dog trainer. If you live with one or more dogs, or if you just like dogs and want to learn more about them, you've tuned into a program that will help educate you about why dogs do the things they do. You'll learn more about their health issues and about how to feed them a good quality diet. Many of you already know that I interview experts in this field who are veterinarians, authors, and other trainers and behavior consultants. I also want to remind all of you that if you have missed any previous shows, or if you want to hear a show again, you can always go to my website, www.jerseydogtrainer.com, click on the page marked Rini's Radio Show, and then click on any podcast link if the subject of that show interests you. There are many there. I'm excited to talk this morning with Carl Herkstroder. Carl is the president of the American Temperament Test Society, Incorporated. This organization specializes in testing dogs on various aspects of temperament, such as stability, shyness, aggressiveness, and friendliness, as well as the dog's instinct for protectiveness toward its handler and or self-preservation in the face of a threat. I'm anxious to know how these tests are used. I believe the American Temperament Test Society has tested 180 breeds, and I can't wait to learn what some of those results were after the dogs were tested. Before we talk to Carl, please let me tell you what services I offer in the South Jersey area as a professional dog trainer and behavior consultant. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Premeza, the Jersey dog trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age, and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Good morning, Carl. Welcome to the doghouse today.
Good morning, Renee. How are you this morning?
I'm doing really, really well, and I'm very anxious to talk to you.
Great.
When I learned that there was an organization that specialized in temperament testing, I immediately was interested in how that's done. Can you define what is meant by temperament?
Well, temperament is a complicated subject, but the best definition that we have found, in fact, it is on our website, was given by a former police chief of Stuttgart, Germany, in an article called The Psychological Basis of Temperament Testing. And he defines temperament as a sum total of all inborn and acquired physical and mental traits and talents which determines, forms, and regulates behavior in the environment. That's a mouthful. In other words, what he's saying is that temperament is a combination of the inbred instincts and the learned traits.
All right, so I understand what you're saying.
It's a combination of the two. That is why we take a very close look at the training that each dog has, because each training will influence how the dog behaves out in the on the test field.
Right. Do you temperament test for shelters, or do you mostly work with private owners?
It's mostly for owners. This temperament test is very labor intensive. And shelters normally do not have the staff available to do that. It takes a fairly large field, at a minimum of about 200 feet by 200 feet of park area. You know, most shelters don't have that available. And because of that, it is rather, like I said, labor-intensive, costly to run a test.
Right.
Because we, American Temperament Test Society, send a chief tester to the area.
Mm-hmm.
That means that the shelter would have to supply anywhere from 6 to 9 people.
I see. Okay.
And yes, we have done some tests for a shelter, and we test quite a few of the shelter dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But these dogs are taken out by private individuals and then brought to the temperament test area.
Okay. All right. And do you get requests from breeders to test their puppies as well?
No, we do not test puppies. This test is designed for mentally mature adult dogs. However, we have a cutoff age of 18 months under which we will not test dogs. We realize, of course, that the larger breeds will not mature until much, much later. In fact, some of the mastiffs may not mature until 42, 48, or 54 months.
Wow.
What we're seeing is in the larger dogs, a dog that is in the early to late adolescent stages.
All right.
And we have to make allowances for that.
I see. You said that you have a cutoff age at 18 months. If you were to test a Rottweiler, at what age would you consider that Rottweiler to be an adult?
Anywhere from 36 to 42 months.
Okay, but you wouldn't, in other words,
it depends a lot upon the line also, the line of the breed.
I see. But you wouldn't wait until that age to temperament test him. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Well, we had to do this 18 months cutoff date for a number of reasons.
Okay.
The younger dogs have a tendency to not pass the requirements for the temperament title. So we raised the age to 18 months.
Okay.
Realizing that the larger dogs will not mature until much, much later.
Okay.
So, like I said, we have to take that into account.
All right. You have a very extensive website, and I've spent a lot of time on there, by the way, just to look at these statistics. These statistics show what on your website? They show all of the dogs that you've tested?
Yes, organized by breeds. And there are three columns there. First, the first column is the breed. The second column is the number of dogs passed for that breed. The third one is number of dogs that have not passed. Now, these figures can be somewhat misleading, especially in the days now when we look at aggressive dogs. The failure rate is not necessarily for aggression.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's for many other things. We have three criteria for failing a dog. One is unprovoked aggression. In other words, the dog shows aggressive tendencies toward either a station worker or one of the testers.
Mm-hmm.
Panic without recovery. In other words, the dog startles and does not settle down.
Mm-hmm.
And we give the dog a chance of about, 30 to 45 seconds to settle down. And that's a long time.
That is a long time.
That's a very long time. And the third criteria is strong avoidance. In other words, the dog does not want to do something. For example, one of the tests is the dog has to walk over some strange footing.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog refuses to walk over that.
Mm-hmm. And what would that footing be, Carl?
That, you know, like I said, most of the failures are for other items that are not aggressive related.
No, Carl, you had said that they're required to walk on strange footing. What footing would they be required to walk over in your test?
Let me go through the description of the test a little bit, and feel free to interrupt when there's something that pops in your mind.
Oh, absolutely. Good.
Mm-hmm. The test was designed as a walk in a park. And we have 10 sub-tests. As the owner dog team walks through the test, the stress level in the dog should build. We start out very easy with what we call a neutral stranger. That person talks to the owner, ignoring the dog. We observe the dog and we're looking for passive social behavior. Passive social behavior and protective instincts at that part.
All right.
Because we're leaving the dog alone.
Mm-hmm.
Number two station is a friendly stranger. That person will pet the dog. But all the way through the test, the owner is not allowed to talk to the dog, give no corrections, give no commands.
I see.
Because we want for the dog to be in charge.
Correct. Oh, that's
very interesting. When the owner gives commands or talks to the dog, then the owner is in charge. And this is a temperament test for dogs.
Right. That's a good point.
Okay, so the second test is a friendly stranger. We pet the dog. I think you can see where the stress level might elevate just a tad here.
Yes, and let me interrupt you just for a minute. And when the stranger pets the dog, do they pet the dog directly over the dog's head?
No.
Oh.
No. The way I instruct the station worker is they have to be at a particular point before the dog arrives. In other words, the dog comes into that person, not the other way around. that can be aggression when the person walks into the dog. So we want the dog to walk into the person. Then present the sniffing hand.
I see.
And then pet from underneath first and then go on top.
I see. So actually, that's really setting the dog up for success, in my viewpoint.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's
okay.
Right.
Okay.
We do not want for the dog to fail. We're looking for the dog's natural responses.
I see. All right.
Be they inbred or be they acquired through training.
Right. Well, I do canine good citizen classes, and, you know, a lot of times I feel that, now I could be wrong, that the dogs really need to be able to accept petting over the head because that's what most people's instincts are to do, right over the head. And
Yes. Well, I also taught dog bite prevention in elementary schools to kindergartners through second grade.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that we mentioned is, you know, when you reach over the top, the nose comes up.
Right.
And with it come all the teeth.
Well, so, I hope you do these classes all over the United States because everybody needs to learn that.
Yes.
Dogs don't like it. But so, all right. So you set the dog up for success with that. And I'm glad to hear that. Go ahead.
The next two tests are acoustic tests. We're looking for investigative behavior toward unusual noises and sharp noises such as gunshots. Well, it doesn't have to be gunshots, but it can be somebody slamming a door or a car door or a thunder or firecracker, something like that.
Right.
We look for investigative behavior there. For the unusual noises, we have a bucket with rocks in it, and the bucket rattles as the dog approaches and set outside a hidden blind.
All right.
And the dog should investigate. Well, if the dog does not investigate the bucket, then we ask the owner to encourage the dog. But they cannot talk to the dog. They must concentrate on the bucket and talk to the bucket.
Oh, I see.
In other words, we want for the dog to investigate the bucket, but not because the dog is told to do it.
Yeah, right. Okay. And how loud does that, when you rattle the rocks in the bucket, is that pretty loud?
Yeah, it's fairly loud.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's fairly loud.
Okay.
The next station, like I said, is the gunshot. We have a series of three shots, simulating door slamming, thunder, firecrackers, any sharp noises. But anytime we can expect a startle effect on the dog. The dog can startle because the handler knows when these noises appear, but the dog does not.
Mm-hmm.
But we do not look at the startle per se, but the recovery from startle.
And
how long does it take for the dog to recover?
How close is the dog to the sound that you are making? Is he right there? If you're shooting a gun or creating these loud noises, is he very close?
Well, the loud noises are behind the blind, about 15 feet from the dog.
I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm. We do not have the gunshots next to the dog. They're behind the dog, 15 feet away from the dog.
I see. Okay.
It's a 22. No, it's not a cannon. It's a 22.
All right. So to some dogs, it may sound like
a cannon. We don't want the owner to jump out of their shoes, you know. Okay. Like I said, it's investigative behavior. We get all kinds of unusual investigative behavior here.
All right. What kind of unusual? What do you see the dogs doing that's so unusual? Explain that.
Well, normally the dogs acknowledge that something is happening and then lose interest.
Oh.
And this is what we're looking for, is the average type response, not the best response that a dog can give.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me continue, and then I'll go into the evaluation part.
Okay.
Okay, the test number five is a visual stimulus. We pop an umbrella, no, not in the dog's face, perpendicular to the dog's approach.
Okay.
And the umbrella is open when the dog is 5 feet from the umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we can expect a startle. But like I said, we do not look at the startle per se, but the recovery from startle.
Okay.
How long does it take for the dog to recover?
Mm-hmm.
And again, if the dog does not investigate the umbrella, then the owner has to talk to the umbrella. Not the dog.
Right.
Talk to the umbrella. Concentrate, focus on the umbrella.
Interesting.
The next two tests, subtests, are footing tests, where we have a plastic spread over the ground.
All right.
The dog and the handler have to walk over that. And the next is an X-pen, flattened out X-pen that we have on the ground. We nail it down to make sure that the dogs do not hurt their pads.
Right.
In other words, we're very safety conscious here.
Yeah.
And only the dog walks over that. And that is the hardest test, by the way.
I would imagine so. That would be, even if you nailed it down, I think it would be uncomfortable on them.
Yes.
And very foreign. To me, what I'm picturing is certain bridges that I've walked over, you know, that they have these metal grates under the bridge for drainage, and if the dog has never walked over anything like that, it's very strange for them.
Yes. This, like I said, this is the hardest test because there are four senses involved. The dog can see it.
Yeah.
It makes some clinking noise when a dog steps on it.
Yeah.
The dog can smell it.
Right.
And, of course, the most important part is the dog feels it on the pants.
Yeah.
And this is where almost half the failures can occur.
Really?
Yeah, this can. I say can.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We give the dogs three chances to go over the plastic and the X-Pan. This tells us something about the confidence level of the dog, tells us something about the learning ability, the investigative behavior. It tells us, you know, how comfortable is the dog walking over strange things.
Right, right.
And the final three subtests are we have a weird stranger.
A weird stranger?
We call it a weird stranger. A drunk comes from behind. No. Like a drunk comes from behind the blind.
Okay.
And that's about 38 feet away from where the owner stands.
Right.
And ignores the dog, walks in a drunken manner across the path of the dog. Well, the dogs are stationary, or the owner is stationary.
All right.
Ignoring the dog in an unusual situation.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be a drunk. How about a handicapped person?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or a child skipping rope.
Okay.
Any unusual situation.
Right.
And then this individual turns towards the dog and approaches in an aggressive manner in two stages, stopping 18 feet from the handler.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there we're looking at decision-making capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at the protective instinct. And here's where we really have to look at the breed characteristics for the dog being tested.
Mm-hmm.
Because we cannot expect a Cavalier to respond the same way as a Rottweiler.
Correct. That's a great... I'm glad you said that, because I was going to ask you.
We cannot expect that.
Right.
They're two different breeds bred for two different purposes.
Right.
No, we have to be very, very breed conscious.
So when you have these different breeds, your expectations are different, and so that would, let's say, preclude whether a Cavalier would pass given his breed, and you would not pass a Rottweiler given his breed based on your expectations of those specific breeds.
Right. Normally with the protection breeds, we're a little bit more stricter, because when the dog walks behind the owner, an avoidance-type manner.
Right.
But that is a very, very weak response for a protection-type dog.
Right. Okay.
Whereas for a non-protection type dog like the Cavalier,
mm-hmm.
yes, it may be a somewhat weaker response, but it is not really a failing response.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit weaker response.
Good.
And this is where the chief tester has to know. The testers have to know quite a few breeds.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For example, some dogs will do a circling maneuver. They will go behind the owner. And of course, the guard dogs are also herding dogs.
Right.
And they do herding maneuvers.
I see.
So, like I said, the chief tester has to know when the dog is actually going behind because of fear or avoidance, or because he's doing a circling maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we have a good training program for our testers.
That's another question I was going to ask you, is how does one become a tester? Does that person require training, extensive training, or tell us just a little bit about that?
Yes, I consider this a fairly comprehensive training program. In order to be a chief tester, you have to advance through stages from an apprentice tester, where you start learning the business, to a tester, to a chief tester. The chief tester is in charge of the entire test operation. Two testers are there to assist him.
Okay.
And we have up to three, anywhere from zero to three apprentice testers who are learning the business.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, like you said, we have over 180. In fact, I think it's closer to over 190 breeds now that we have tested.
Wow.
So our chief tester must know quite a bit.
Yes.
In order to become a chief tester, we ask that the individual test a minimum of 240 dogs under the supervision of another chief tester or several chief testers.
Right.
In at least 8 trials.
Mm-hmm.
They have to pass 2 examinations.
Okay.
And to become a chief tester, they have to run 2 tests under the direct supervision, where the chief tester will just stand back and let the candidate run the entire show.
Hmm. This is really extensive, just like you said.
So, other words, we want to make sure that our people know exactly what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. This is great. Quickly, what would if a dog failed the test, what advice would you give the owner, and would you allow the dog to retake the test?
Okay. Dog failures can be for a number of reasons. The most common reason is that the dog is a little bit young for the test.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In other words, the 18 months, the dog is just a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And teenagers can be confident in some areas and not very confident in other areas.
Right.
My suggestion, if I see that the dog is lacking confidence, and I can see that because of the stress level in the dog.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When the dog is stressed, the scores will go down. Remind me to talk about the scores. The scores will go down. And if the scores will go down, that means the dog is stressed. And I usually advise the owner to wait a year or two, give the dog a chance to mature,
mm-hmm.
and then bring the dog back.
I see.
We test the dog only twice. If the dog fails twice,
right.
There's no need testing again because we'll see the same results.
Right, right. Okay.
Because a weak dog will always test weak.
Mm. All right, so there's your inbred temperament.
Yes.
You know, your this
That's
is what the dog comes
like.
With, right? Exactly. Okay.
And I talked about the scores evaluation. Another thing that we do, if we spot something that would be corrected or could be corrected by training, we find that agility is a very, very good confidence builder in dogs.
Yes, it is. How wonderful. That's wonderful. Good. I'm glad.
We recommend agility.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other things. Herding can mm-hmm. be a good confidence builder for herding breeds.
Yep.
Tracking can be a good confidence builder.
Mm-hmm.
Hunting can be a good confidence builder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these things that give the dog a chance to say, hey, I can do this.
Absolutely. And these are things that dogs were bred to do in the first place. So
yes.
It gives them that outlet. Absolutely. I think that's great advice.
So this is normally what we do. Now, scoring. We score on a scale from 0 through 10. 0 being the failure, of course, I mentioned the three criteria for failure before,
mm-hmm.
and 10 is the ultimate response that you can get.
Mm-hmm.
However, we do not look at the ultimate response. We look at the average response. We like to have every dog be in the average being 4, 5, and 6.
All right.
Because when you have the ultimate response, I wouldn't want to live with a dog that has more than one ultimate response, because the dog will be bouncing off the walls.
Right. All right. That's interesting.
Okay. So,
yeah.
So we like to have the dogs in the average area, maybe just a tad above average. Now, when we go below average, you know, then we have the what I call the negative results. We see something in the dog that really should not be in the breed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's some avoidance there. Maybe there's some lack of confidence there.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that really needs to be either corrected or the owner should be aware of that.
Okay.
Now, I can give you an example of why we don't look at the high test scores. I had a Rottweiler in Minnesota several years ago. When the umbrella opened, the body went down.
Oh.
Big smile on his face. The ears came forward and he pounced on the umbrella.
Jeez.
I mean, what did it tell me? Well, the dog was not afraid.
Right.
Dog has high play drive.
Yeah.
Okay. And the dog was just friendly, outgoing.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave it a 10.
Good.
Now, let's take the same response out onto the street.
Yeah.
You know how children open umbrellas?
Yeah.
And then they open it horizontally and then raise it over their head?
Right.
If the same response happens there, how are we going to explain to the judge that the dog was friendly?
Yeah.
It cannot be done.
Right. That's interesting.
So there's you know, that's one reason that we like to see everything in the average area.
Yeah. Carl, what type of owners take these tests? Are they, in other words, and even I was going to ask, does the police department bring dogs to you? Do people who want to do
I have tested one or two police dogs, but generally not, because the police training is slightly different than the average training that the owner does.
Mm-hmm.
The dogs are very keyed into the individual. They're very keyed into commands.
Okay, right.
As I mentioned earlier, you know, we're not allowing the owner to talk to the dogs.
Right. I would imagine that this test would be an excellent test for someone who wants to do, to take their dog and go to disasters and, you know, maybe dogs that are saving people in disasters. That dog would be making decisions on his own very
like a
often.
Search and rescue dog.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would imagine that your test would be excellent for them.
It does point out certain tendencies in the dog.
Right.
Certain instincts.
Yes.
And I have recommended to people that they take a look at protection type training for their dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Schutzhund trainings.
Yes.
Because in Schutzhund training, the dog learns how to turn on an aggression when he sees it.
Right.
But he also learns how to turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the key for the dog to know when to turn off the aggression.
Right. What is
that to me, when I test a dog that has had Schutzhund training, I am not afraid to go up there and pet the dog and talk to the dog afterward.
Is that right?
I know they have been trained well.
Yeah. Does it matter how they're trained? Because Schutzhund can be trained very negatively, and it can be trained also positively.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, it does.
Yes.
I was in a test several years ago where one German Shepherd kept his eye on me from the time he walked on the field to the time he left the field.
Oh, my.
He did everything right, and so we could not fail him.
Right.
As I walked up to the dog to talk to the owner, that dog lunged at me.
Wow.
Of course, at that particular point, I failed it immediately on my own.
Of course.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness. So yeah. Definitely.
That, as far as I was concerned, was not proper training.
No, right. All right. This is really interesting. And this is just, I was so excited to discover your website and to discover that this is being done in this country. How can people get more information about the American Temperament Test Society and the schedule of where these tests are held?
Okay. How to schedule a test? Well, the first thing, of course, is to make sure that your organization wants to hold a test.
All right.
And when you decide that a test is in order, you can contact us a number of ways.
All right.
You can go to our website, which is www.atts.org.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can give us a call at area code 972-557-2887.
Oh, wonderful.
That's our administrative office in Texas.
I see. Coral, it has been wonderful talking with you. I've enjoyed the information that you've given out here today, and I hope that people do go to the website. It's jam-packed full of information, statistics. It's a great website to go on, and I hope that people do take advantage of this service that you offer. And it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I find this field fascinating.
Yes, I do.
The more I learn about canine behavior, I find that I know very little.
Well, you and I are in the same boat. Thank you so much, Carl, and I hope you have the best day ever.
Okay, well, thank you very much for a chance to explain our test.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Thank you, listeners, for joining us this morning. I hope that you enjoyed today's program. Please come back next Thursday morning from 10 to 10:30 on WNJC 1360 AM. We'll be talking with a trainer from Mystic, Connecticut, who is very involved with American Lab Rescue. Have a great day, everybody.